I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. Yes, Dave Cameron, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, and this is episode 9, very possibly episode 9. Maybe not episode 9, but I think it is.
It is 9,
okay. I'm Carson Sestouli. I'm an editor of Fangraphs. I didn't know host of Fangraphs. No, I'm an editor of Fangraphs and host of Fangraphs. You are Dave Cameron. You're the managing editor. You're there?
I am here.
All right, very good, Dave Cameron. Of course, this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, and what we do here is to provide objective, dispassionate analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays. And ideally, or in theory, to complement the less objective, less dispassionate analysis that is maybe more commonly found in the greater Toronto area.
Instead of saying less dispassionate, couldn't you just say more passionate?
More passionate. That's right. That's right. I could have definitely said that. Yeah. I would be remiss, and also in violation of our contractual agreement, Dave Cameron, if I were not to mention not our sponsor so much as our, what's the word you use?
Patron.
Our patron, that's right. Our patron is Homeland Sports.
Homestand.
Our patron is Homestand Sports, who facilitate the Pitch Talks events. And Dave, would you actually explain briefly what a Pitch Talks event is?
It is a gathering of baseball fans in a particular area to talk about their team with local broadcasters, writers, bloggers, team executives, various people who have things to say and are entertaining. Usually at a venue such as a music hall or a comedy club or some other establishment that sells adult beverages. Mm-hmm. Those beverages are consumed during the event, often on stage. It is a fun time.
And I believe you just participated one in Seattle in which at least one beat writer, perhaps under the influence of alcohol, perhaps revealed more than he otherwise would have about the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, I think when you get the combination of alcohol and rowdy crowd cheering on, sometimes the insiders who know things might say things they wish they had not said, which is then fun to hear and potentially fun to tweet out.
Hear them regret it. Yeah, watching people perform an act that they will ultimately regret. What a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, you got to pay for that.
That's what Pitch Talks allows for people. Probably one person who will not be drinking heavily is one of the next participants in a Pitch Talk, and that is John Thorne. He's the official baseball historian, official historian of Major League Baseball. That's June 8th in the Toronto area at the Sport Gallery, and that will occur at 7 p.m.
Do you know that John Thorne does not imbibe?
He seems to have a professorial air to him. So even if he were drinking, he would be able to. He probably would not be. He would not surrender to his passions the same way.
Or maybe he would come out with some like really high end spirit. Like he's gonna like bring some Poppy Von Winkle on stage or something.
Yeah. Well, the only way to find out is to attend, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also coming up, San Francisco, Monday, June 12th. It starts at 7:30 p.m. local time.
You know, he's gonna be drinking during that show.
Oh, it's Eno Saris.
Yeah, he's going to be.
Eno Saris is a sloppy, sloppy drinker.
He likes his alcohol.
Yes, he does. He will be there, as will Grant Brisby, who, of course, is the owner-operator, or at least the operator, of McCovey Chronicles, the San Francisco Giants blog. Also there will be Bobby Evans, who is the actual GM of the San Francisco Giants. So that seems like a relevant event.
Yeah.
And Pitch Talks Pittsburgh is Thursday, June 15th, 7 p.m. And who will be there but Fangraph's own Travis Sochick, the prolific Travis Sochick, joined by a number of interesting folks, including Joe Block, one of the play-by-play voices of the Pittsburgh Pirates. And John Parrotto was another name I recognize. Why do I recognize it?
He's been writing about baseball for a very long time at a lot of places.
Right. Okay.
He's Edwin Jackson of internet baseball writing.
Okay, right. In the most complimentary terms.
Yeah, he's like pitched everywhere.
Right, pitched everywhere. Okay, so that is Thursday, June 15th, 7 p.m. Keith Law is also coming up towards the end of the month, and I believe that will be in Toronto as well. So a lot of events. It appears as though there's one coming up August 7th, and our own Jeff Sullivan will be there.
I will be at that one as well.
In Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, it's happening the day after the Sabre seminar in Boston, so a few of us will we'll trek from Boston to New York and go have a good time up in New York.
That's right. And I will likely not be there.
You'll be trying to raise a child.
That'll be right. I have a child due at the end of July, so I will not be in attendance. Okay. Well, that is it. That is what I have to say about the Pitch Talks today. And those tickets are always available at homestandsports.com. Homestandsports.com. Now let us move on to some dispassionate analysis.
Homestandsports.com is an actual site?
I don't know. Let's not check, though. Let's leave that to the mysteries of the internet, Dave Cameron. Let's move on, though, to some dispassionate analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays. How do we begin, typically, Dave Cameron? We review the past week. And because we're recording this on a Wednesday, the past week would not seem to be the same thing, but I like to go from Monday through Sunday, right? So the most recent Monday through the most recent Sunday, that would be May 29th through June 4th, your Toronto Blue Jays, not your Toronto Blue Jays, really, the Toronto Blue Jays go 5-2, which is promising. And that's one that started with a 17-2 drubbing of Cincinnati, but stayed relatively positive. So some success, of course. I assume that some of this has to do with the return of Josh Donaldson. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, anytime you can get back one of the five best players in baseball, that will help you win more than not.
Okay, all right. Well, that is going to be very good. And you also seem to think, you were attempting to communicate to me before we began recording, that Justin Smoke continues to have the same sort of success that he's been exhibiting over the first couple months of the season.
Or maybe even more. I think in April he was okay, ran like a 110 WRC plus or something. He was, you know, better than Justin Smoke had been previously, but not anything that would get you super excited. And then in May, he hit 8 home runs and had like a 170 WRC plus or something, and, you know, really showed his power. In April, he cut down on the strikeouts, which is made him interesting, but in May, he added power to that and had one of the best months of his career. And then to begin June, the first week of June, he's already hit 3 or 4 home runs, carrying over from what he did in May. So now he's among the major league leaders in home runs, which is unusual for a guy who has been an underpowered first baseman for most of his career. Justin Smoke was interesting and is now becoming even more interesting.
So Justin Smoke, right, he has not necessarily been very good as a major leaguer.
He's been bad.
He's been roughly replacement level for years, but he's also gotten a lot of playing time.
Yeah, he was a first-round pick.
How do you square – I mean, is it just the pedigree, or is there something else going on? For some reason, and the Blue Jays appeared to be the main beneficiaries at this point, for some reason teams have always been betting – on Justin Smoke. Well, two teams have always been betting on Justin Smoke, the Seattle Mariners and the Toronto Blue Jays. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he hit in college and he hit in the minors and he was expected to hit when he got to the big leagues has earned him somewhat of a leash where there's always been like, well, he draws walks and he makes some contact. If he can just start driving the ball, then we'd have a good player here, which is what's happening right now. And so I think teams, when they have invested the kind of resources into in the Mariners' case, I think they traded Cliff Lee to get Justin Smoke, and he was kind of considered a core part of their future offense, and so they didn't want to so easily give up on him. They also didn't have very many good alternatives. And then Toronto basically got him on the cheap and said, you know, like, this is a guy who, even if he doesn't become what we thought he was going to be, maybe he can turn into a useful, you know, league average player or something like that. And then they let Edwin Encarnacion go, so they had playing time for him this year. And what now, at age 30, he's finally showing that he can hit a curveball.
To what degree does pedigree buy time for a player? I don't know if you are able, and I understand putting you on the spot, of identifying any particular examples, but this would seem to be one, because there are players who've been replacement level and have not earned, you know, 7 seasons worth of, you know, near at least half, if not full, playing time in the major league level.
Yeah, I think it matters a lot. I mean, like, we can look at, like Mark Appel was the number one pick in the draft a couple of times, and, you know, one of the more noted draft prospects in recent history because he, went back in the draft and it was a top 10 pick on 2 separate occasions. Mark Appel is nearly like 7 in AAA as like a 25-year-old. Like, if he wasn't a high draft pick, he would have been released by now, or would be back in A-ball or something, or would be a reliever conversion. Like, you can look at these guys who, when they were highly thought of coming out of college, and Smoke was considered what the best hitting prospect in his draft class, they get a long leash where scouts remember back to, hey, look, we really liked this guy 4 or 5 years ago. Perhaps it just needs a change of scenery. Perhaps, you know, there's something about the player development in that organization that didn't work with this particular player. We think we can fix this. And I think, you know, teams are willing to rely pretty heavily on old scouting reports and say, look, you know, we think there's talent here. Maybe it just needed time to get figured out.
I don't know if it was the Freakonomics book or some other source, but there was a report at some point about how players, maybe specifically from Canada, hockey players were disproportionately born in the months of January and February. And that's because when they were coming up as juniors, and, you know, you have a cutoff at the end of December, so the players, you know, born on January 1st to January 31st, whatever, were always, they're obviously the oldest players in the league. And at that age, when you're talking about junior hockey, they are, they're going to be bigger, typically, than their peers, right?
Right, yeah.
And so they were making, at a very young age, they were making more advanced teams, and because they were making more advanced teams, they were also benefiting from better coaching, more difficult competition, and so they improved at a faster level than their peers who were born in November, December, for example. So you have this disproportionate number of hockey players in the NHL now who were born in January and February. I'm wondering, like, if you just took a run-of-the-mill college first baseman and you gave him, you know, like I said, like 7, 8 years of playing time, and you gave him major league instruction for that same length of time, is it possible that by age 30, after joining the league at age 23, as did Justin Smoak, that he would come around and he would record, over one win in, you know, roughly a third of a season?
Maybe. I mean, I think there is something to the ability to face major league pitching and kind of learn from your mistakes. And obviously you need some baseline of talent. Like, I don't think the Blue Jays could just stick you or I out there and be like, oh, okay, you know, with 1,000 at bats, they're going to be good. But I think if you're a, you know, reasonably competent baseball players and you get, you know, major league instruction and major league at bats against major league pitching, there's a chance that, you know, that kind of development could help turn you into something better than you would have been if you were evaluated as, like, a, you know, mid-tier player with low upside and you get stuck in Double-A for the rest of your life.
All right. Okay, all right. Well, so anyways, it's good, I suppose, for the Blue Jays right now that they are benefiting from Justin Smoak's offense because, as you've noted, and as the facts bear out, the loss of Josh Donaldson for an extended period hurt the team. And now, where do we find them? Where do we find them in terms of the playoffs? Their playoff chances? It doesn't have to be a precise number, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in the race. They've pulled themselves back to within a few games of 500, I believe. They're 28 and 31 currently. The good news for them is there's a whole host of teams just hanging out around 500. The Orioles have kind of come back to the pack. The entire AL Central's around 500. You know, basically everyone in the AL West not named Houston is around 500. So even though they're under 500, so is basically everybody else trying to win a wild card in the American League. So I would think that, you know, they're probably, what, 40% to make the playoff season, something like that.
Right. Now, they've lost two games, of the games they've lost recently have been pitched by Marco Estrada, who was one of the most important pitchers on the team last year. Marco Estrada has been notable in recent years, in particular, after joining Toronto Blue Jays, for essentially for suppressing any sort of damage on contact, right? He has consistently recorded what we might call fielding independent numbers, in particular expected fielding independent numbers, which looks at his strikeout rate, his walk rate, and then his fly ball rate. And based on those, we would have expected him to record worse than average ERAs. What he's actually recorded are considerably above average ERAs. This year is different from Marco Estrada. He's recording some of the best fielding independent numbers of his career, and yet he's allowing more runs than he did in either the past two seasons. I guess on the one hand, you'd have to say that there's something encouraging going on. He's struck out nearly 30% of the batters he's faced, but the suppression of runs isn't there. So what is going on precisely?
Yeah, but this is the thing. Marco Estrada has been a fascinating pitcher throughout his career. Like, when he was in Milwaukee earlier in his career, he was a high strikeout guy who wasn't, you know, an average pitcher, but it wasn't great. He had one good season back in, what, 2012 or something like that. But he bounced between the rotation and the bullpen, didn't really establish himself. And then kind of toward the end of his tenure in Milwaukee, he stopped striking guys out, but his ability to limit quality of contact improved dramatically. And then when he got to Toronto, that's kind of carried over. He posted his first year in Toronto when he was so good. He posted the lowest strikeout rate of his career, but also the lowest ERA of his career because he posted a 216 batting average on balls in play. So we've had this interesting inverse relationship with Estrada where as his strikeout rate goes down, his batting average on balls in play, his contact quality also goes down, which means he's giving up fewer hits even though he's getting fewer strikeouts. For most pitchers, fewer strikeouts is bad. It's a huge red warning flag. It's something's wrong. For Estrada, it seems like maybe fewer strikeouts is actually better, because this year his strikeouts are up, but he's giving up a 314 batting average on balls in play, which will be like the highest of his career. This is a guy who has always induced a ton of weak contact, a ton of infield flies, and seems to be hitting too many barrels of the bats this season while also, striking out the highest batters at the highest rate of his career. And so, it seems like for Marco Estrada, perhaps there's some kind of middle ground where, you want more than an 18% strikeout rate like he posted a couple years ago, but maybe at 28% like he's at right now, maybe in order to get that many strikeouts, he has to pitch in the zone too often or pitch in places where he's not generating as much weak contact. And perhaps this version of Marco Estrada, even with a big jump in strikeout rate, is worse than prior versions.
Right. And it should be noted, he's still having a pretty good season. It just hasn't been on par with his most recent two seasons. I guess it always seems as though the sort of success that comes along with suppressing contact authority, there always seems to be something that's a little bit magical or ephemeral about it. You did mention some of the sort of variables that might contribute to it. What is it? Do you know what it's been specifically for Marco Estrada?
Yeah, but it's mostly that he throws a fastball up at the very top of the strike zone. So he's one of these guys who's lived as a high fastball guy, and that's allowed him to generate a ton of infield flies. After he had 39 infield flies, year before 32, infield flies are basically strikeouts, right? They're caught every single time, unless guys like run into each other or trip over the mound or something. But with almost no exceptions, infield flies are outs. Estrada's ability to command his fastball at the top of the zone has been a huge key for him. This year, he has 8 infield flies. So, on pace for what, like 20? Like about half of what last year's rate was. Mm-hmm. He's still giving up a lot of fly balls, but now they're going to the outfield, and that's worse.
Okay, all right. Well, that is a look, I guess, then at the most recent week, and generally speaking, the near past for the Toronto Blue Jays. We will look at the week ahead, which we've already sort of ventured into because this is a Wednesday. But Dave Cameron and I will continue the trend of at least saying a word about a Blue Jays prospect in the middle portion of the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. The prospect of note this week is Bo Bichette.
Yeah.
Bo Bichette is the son of former major leaguer Dante Bichette and is having a fantastic season with the Toronto Blue Jays Low A club. And of particular note about Bo Bichette is David Lorla, who writes for FanGraphs. He published an interesting interview this past week that took place not only with Bichette, but also with Gil Kim, who is the Blue Jays farm director. And he asked questions of both Bichette and Kim. There were similar questions. Now, Bichette is a 19-year-old, right? And I think that it's probably unfair to ask a 19-year-old to be very articulate about his playing ability. So it is interesting to hear how Kim, who is the farm director, discusses Bichette. And it is interesting in particular because so Bichette has put up crazy numbers at low A. And right now he's slashing .382, .455, .618. Obviously, now you're just talking about BABIP from the point of view of pitchers. His batting average in ball and play right now is .458, whereas league averages tend to be around .300. But we're talking about a player who, for the moment, is staying at shortstop, and so that kind of offensive production is outstanding. It's interesting that a shortstop would hit for so much power, in particular one who's not that big. What Kim says, though, is that while Bichette isn't physically impressive, he does swing hard and is very aggressive with his swinging. But what Kim says is it's an aggressive swing, but the bat path is good, and he controls the barrel pretty well. He gets over-aggressive, but a lot of hitters do. And he goes on to say that they want Bichette to keep the same sort of approach and mindset. And while they've asked him maybe to, or helped him, not necessarily asked him, but helped him to come up with strategies for his two-strike approach, when you might change, they've also said that they really like how he approaches things. They said the aggressive approach, Kim says, works to his advantage. He says, we are very content with his progress so far. And I think that that's interesting. On our most recent edition of Fangraphs Audio, you and I discussed the sort of adjustments that elite players are constantly making, like Clayton Kershaw dropping down, throwing more of a sidearm vantage point occasionally, or Max Scherzer introducing a third breaking ball to his repertoire. You have this also occurring at the low A level, where you have a player like Bo Bichette, who is on the one hand he's adjusting, but on the other hand, like he's utilizing what a pretty aggressive approach to his advantage, and the team doesn't necessarily see any chance, any reason to stop him from doing it, unless he runs into real problems. So Bo Bichette is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast prospect of the week. That's what I'll say. I'll say he's the prospect of the week. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. Okay. Dave Cameron, this is the time in the program when we take a look at the week ahead. The week ahead is partly the week of the past because we're recording this on Wednesday, as I noted. They've played two games against Oakland so far this week, and neither of them have gone particularly well. One of them we've sort of gestured to, and that was Marco Estrada. That was Tuesday's game they lost. So they have one more game in Oakland, and they move out to Seattle. Now, we visited Seattle at one point earlier in the season, and at that point, Seattle was throwing out a lot of anonymous pitchers. Is that still the case at this point?
Slightly less anonymous. James Paxton has returned from the disabled list. He's notable to Blue Jays fans in that he's both good and Canadian,
mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. Felix Hernandez is still hurt. Drew Smiley is still hurt. Sashi Ibikuma is still hurt. So not a rotation that you're going to write home about, but at least James Paxton gives them a legitimate Major League starter that they didn't have last time.
Now, I know that at the Pitch Talks event in Seattle, our colleague Jeff Sullivan, he made a grand announcement, a grand statement, potentially controversial statement. He said he thinks that Chris Sale thinks James Paxton is superior to Chris Sale.
Yeah, he called him the best left-handed pitcher in the American League, which Chris Sale is a left-handed pitcher in the American League, so by process of elimination, he thinks that Paxton is better than Sale. I don't know that he actually believes that, but it was a fun thing to say in front of a Seattle audience.
Who is Sam Gaviglio?
He's a pitcher.
Okay, all right. What is he going to offer up to Toronto batters?
Home run balls.
Okay, all right. So the combination for the Blue Jays of facing Sam Gaviglio and Ariel Miranda would seem to be a positive formula for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Ariel Miranda is actually interesting. Miranda's a perfectly capable back-end starter. He's major league quality. He's not great. He is not a guy you're going to look at and be like, man, this guy's amazing. But Ariel Miranda is at least capable of giving you good innings. Yeah, they should beat Sam Gaviglio pretty good.
Okay, right. And I will say that the sort of generic projections, win projections for the Blue Jays over those first two games of that series are roughly 52-53%. So above a 50% chance of winning. And then they face Paxton, and the chances are not as good. They're closer to 40% for that. Of course, Paxton's been quite good. And then the team moves on next week, but I would like to just touch on it briefly because I'm curious how you feel about him. June 13th is next Tuesday, but that would be a game in which they most likely face Jake Odorizzi. And I'm interested in Jake Odorizzi because I know he's part of – he has a profile that a lot of other Tampa Bay pitchers have, which is high fastballs and changeups. I believe that's right. And I'm wondering if what sort of success Jake Odorizzi is having this year.
He's having a kind of a Marco Estrada, normal Marco Estrada kind of year, and that he's not missing a lot of bats. Not necessarily, performing well by fielding independent standards, but he's posting a .225 batting average on balls in play. So, if you were looking for, like, who's the next Marco Estrada, maybe it's Jake Odorizzi.
Well, so what will be notable then is that he's actually facing Marco Estrada in that particular
game. Well, that should be quite an interesting matchup. Mentor and mentee.
Right, and it would be interesting to place an over-under bet on infield fly balls for that particular game, perhaps.
Yeah, although I think Odorizzi's only has generated 2 infield fly balls this year, but he generated over 20 each of the last couple of years. Generally, he is an infield fly ball guy.
All right, yeah, interesting thing to watch that. All right, well, that covers the week ahead. We still have some injuries, I think. Less Russ Martin at third base these days because Donaldson is back. But Devin Travis will not be with the team, at least for the immediate future. What's wrong with Devin Travis?
He hurt his knee again. This is, his third knee problem in the last year, starting to become a worrisome sign. I believe the story is that when he got on the team plane, he was fine. When he got off the team plane, he couldn't walk, which isn't great. If you can hurt yourself sitting on a plane, maybe your bones are not made for Major League Baseball.
Well, yeah, actually, I will say that air travel can be difficult for some people. But it's also a sort of an occupational hazard when you're
if it's difficult for you, then being a major league player might not be for you.
He succeeded in he's been successful when he's been on the field as a major leaguer.
Yeah, no, Devin Travis has talent, but health becoming a legitimate concern, especially for a guy who, if he keeps having knee problems, you would think this will do damage to his defensive value, which wasn't already that high. He was a fringy defensive second baseman. If he has to change positions and move to, first base or something, I don't think the bat play is there.
Okay, all right. Well, that is too bad about Devin Travis. So without Devin Travis in the lineup, then who fills that second base gap?
Ryan Goins.
Okay, all right. So who's playing shortstop right now, then?
Troy Tulowitzki.
Well, he's pretty good.
Yeah. He's better than Ryan Goins.
Better than Ryan Goins. Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough. So that's a look at the week ahead, which also brings us to the conclusion of the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast, Dave Cameron.
I'm thrilled to be completed.
Okay. All right. Well, let's end it then. Allow me first to thank you, Dave Cameron.
You're welcome.
All right. That is Dave Cameron. He's the managing editor of Fangraphs.com. I'm Carson Sestouli. This has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.